Hello and welcome to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Giselle Hannah. A fragile and hard-won ceasefire has been declared in Gaza following 2 years and, in truth, decades of violence, occupation and resistance. The world has watched in horror as Israeli airstrikes devastated homes, schools, hospitals and entire neighbourhoods. Thousands have been killed, disproportionately women and children. Entire families erased. And yet, for the people of Gaza, this is not new. The siege has been ongoing for over 17 years, the occupation over 75. So when we talk about a ceasefire, we have to ask, what does peace mean in the absence of justice? What does silence mean when the structures of apartheid remain firmly intact? On today's show, we'll be speaking to May Saif, Palestinian activist and strident organiser in Free Palestine, Melbourne. Later in the show, Renee Nayef from Students for Palestine, her speech from the Melbourne October 12 rally. The ceasefire deal, it's being welcomed by many as a relief from the immediate violence, but of course critics and us on the left argue it leaves a broader structure of occupation and blockade untouched. From your perspective, does the ceasefire represent any step forward for justice for Palestinians, or is it just a return to a deeply unjust status quo?
Well, I think it's important to recognise that Israel has a very long history of breaching ceasefire deals. Not just recently in January, a ceasefire deal was broken by Israel not even 2 months later. But even in that period of 2 months, they were still committing crimes. They were still killing people, incarcerating people. I think what is concerning is that we have normalised the violence and brutality of the Israeli state. On the 16th of September, an independent UN commission of inquiry determined that Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. That has barely made the news in Australian media. And as we enter into this new phase of the ceasefire deal, yes, it's great that we have a reprieve from the constant bombardment and killing, but that does not mean that we're going to have safety for Palestinians. It does not mean that the genocide will not continue, because we know genocide is simply more than just bombing people or starving people. It has long, long ramifications. And for Palestinians, it does not address the question of the occupation, the apartheid system that Israel inflicts upon Palestinians, dominating them in every aspect of their life. It does not address the illegal land grabs, the acquisition of our homes, or the constant daily incursions that is experienced within the West Bank. It doesn't, to be frank, address the violence of the illegal settlers and settlements and what is happening right now in the West Bank. There are so many questions that have not been addressed. But what we do know is that at least there is some reprieve from the daily minute bombardment of a civilian population.
As a person who's both pro-union and deeply involved in the pro-Palestinian liberation movement, how do you see the role of labour movements both here in Australia, across the region and internationally more broadly in shifting the political terrain beyond short-term ceasefires and towards long-term solutions?
Well, I think that our union movement is going to be the backbone of liberation and drawing attention and pushing back against the powers that be of normalising Israel's crimes. We see, mass union mobilisations happening in Europe and Italy recently with the dock workers and going on strike. Even here in Australia, the NUA has come out strongly. They've sent Hamish McPherson onto the Samud Flotilla. There is a lot of work that our unions can do. I particularly want to say that our unions have a history of standing against apartheid. They stood against South African apartheid. They played a really leading role globally. And there is an opportunity for our unions to take the same moral legal stand. And there's an opportunity for us to start mobilising through our unions. That really hasn't happened to to be honest, to the extent that they're seeing anywhere else in the world, in Australia. But that doesn't mean we should stop. It means we need to engage with our union movement, because it's people power. It's every single day people who make change. Our government and the media and elites have shown that they are more than willing to whitewash Israel's crimes, to normalise it, to not even report the basic facts. Just for example, there were articles that went out this week talking about Palestine, and in there, there's no context around the flotilla, there were severe violations against, people being abducted by the Israeli state. No context given to that. There was the Commission of Inquiry joining UN Special Rapporteur experts, the International Association of Genocide Scholars, Amnesty International. The list can go on, Medicine Sans Frontières. And all of those, including the International Court of Justice, found that the right of Palestinians in Gaza to be protected from genocide is plausible, and there are measures that need to be put into place. And, measures were demanded in January, March and May. None of these have been met. So we have a complete disconnect from our media and our government, who refuse to act on their legal obligations. It's not even simply moral, it's a legal obligation, particularly now that there's the UN recognised Palestine. There is a role for our unions to push against that status quo and stand firm with Palestine and put, pressure our government to act accordingly.
Well, some ceasefire agreements, and we have talked about this a little bit, but I just want to go into it a little bit more deeply. Some of these ceasefire agreements do end up reinforcing the authority of actors who don't necessarily represent the grassroots will of Palestinians. There has been a lot of talk about any future arrangement in Palestine excluding Hamas as the legitimate representative of the Palestinian people. How should we on the left think about political representation, legitimacy, etc.? I mean, everybody's got an opinion that isn't necessarily rooted in fact about whether Hamas continues to enjoy the confidence and support of the Gazans. And people will say there hasn't been an election since 2007, so that they're not legitimately representative. However, they're the most representative because there's nobody else. How should we be thinking about representation?
Well, thank you for raising that question, because Palestinian self-determination the right for us to elect who we want and to have our own narrative represented on the world stage is completely lacking here. Essentially, what we're finding is we've got an imperialist power, America and its allies, determining what will happen in Palestine. There has been no pressure or anything held to the Israeli state. They still will have their military in Gaza. People really need to understand that. They will still be occupying Gaza. They've been, embargoing Gaza for over 16 years. We live under occupation. None of that is going to change. That is the status quo, and nothing has been drawn up to address it. But I will say particularly, we've not been able to have elections in Palestine because the Israeli state has not allowed it. People need to understand that the reason why Palestinians can't go through election cycles or have not had ability to formulate or have political representation is because the Israeli state has determined we are not allowed to. They control this. And so they will, for example, Netanyahu is on record funding Hamas to destabilize his ability to negotiate for peace or whatever it may be with the Palestinian people to not have to deal with the PLO. But at the same time, if we look at the history of Palestinians engaging with the West and particularly Israel, we look at the Oslo Accords, which the Oslo Accords further entrenched Israel's domination of Palestine. In fact, I was there after the First Intifada, after the Oslo Accords in the West Bank. In fact, Israeli military representation into our daily lives became much more solidified within the West Bank. and normalise their incursions into our daily life. And so we need to understand that from that perspective. When we are negotiating or talking about Palestinian representation, it is through the lens of what the West will allow us. They will determine who is bad, they will determine who is good, and they will, the Israeli state knows, and they will structure who can speak on our behalf and what can be said. The fact that we haven't had elections for over 16 years is because the Israeli state will not allow it, and that is the reality.
Given that the ceasefire was largely shaped by external actors like the US, Egypt and Qatar, what do you think this says about Palestinian voices and how they are or aren't centred in peace negotiations? What would be a more democratic, or what would a more democratic process look like?
Well, I think that we can safe to say that we aren't central. I think it's very safe to say that Palestinians are dehumanised to such a level that even our bodies, our children, our homes are not sacred. And so we're not even part of the conversation. The fact that we've got other, you know, countries acting to speak on our behalf without any representation from our own communities is very much so endemic of the issue and the history of the Palestinian experience and narrative. They do not want Palestinians to be represented. They want to tell us. You know, we had the Israeli state imposed onto us. Palestinians found themselves stateless and without a homeland in 1948 and, you know, dispossessed and ethnically cleansed. We can say from the very get-go that there has been no genuine will to have Palestinian representation or any self-platform of self-determination. What we have had is whatever powers that be tell us what we should think, what we should feel. But I will say that as Palestinians, we have always resisted this. We've always tried to find ways in which to push our own narratives and our own thoughts. And there will be attempts to silence that. I will say, for example, a lot of big focus for a lot of Palestinians is seeing if Israel is going to release Marwan Barghouti. He's been a long time. He's been in prison for over 20 years at this stage, I believe. And he was playing a positive role towards genuine peace for Palestinians, for a lot of Palestinians. And what we've seen is that if you have people who are able to, represent Palestinians, they either get assassinated or incarcerated. So I think it's very clear that as Palestinians, we know what we're facing, but we will still be pushing. It's why we have, Palestinian civil society and our trade unions have called for BDS. They've called for action from civil society outside of Palestine to, campaign and fight for us and hold the powers that be accountable so we have some genuine power when we come to negotiating or talking about our rights.
There's always the risk that with a ceasefire comes a little bit of a lull in morale in the movement. I guess our final question this morning is, where to from here? Do you think the ceasefire is going to see a kind of a halt or a lull in a movement for a free Palestine? And even with the ceasefire, what's next? What are the demands from here? What does the movement look like from here?
Well, I think it's really important to understand we have not just been protesting because of the genocide and ending the ceasefire. Ending the ceasefire is just the bare minimum. That is the minimum. We have been marching and protesting and campaigning for liberation. We have been demanding sanctions. We have asked and demanded that our government meet its legal and moral obligations and apply sanctions against a renegade genocidal. It has committed genocide. That crime has not stopped. It has committed the crime of genocide, the crime of all crimes. It is committing the crime of apartheid. It is about time that our government took a position and sanctioned the state of Israel. We have demanded that from day one. The ceasefire is just the one step forward. We have to keep pushing because the reality is the status quo is completely untenable. It is a complete subjugation and violence. Most Palestinians have had family killed. More than 40% of the population has been illegally incarcerated at some point or another. The status quo is living under a life of subjugation and violence and oppression. So We've not just been campaigning for a ceasefire. That is completely the bare minimum. We are fighting for so much more, and we believe that we deserve the basic modicum of equality like everyone else, and we deserve that we should live without being persecuted or oppressed under such a violent and despotic regime and a system of oppression. And you know what? Our government has a role to play with this. Our media has a role to play with this. Our unions can have a role to play with this. This is not just simply, hey, ceasefire, let's all pack up and go home. That's great. Step one, well, why is Israel's military still going to be in the Gaza Strip? Why are there still illegal settlements? Why do we still live under a system of apartheid? You know, the fight has not ended, and liberation is a long, hard-fought road, but we need to keep pushing. And I really, really encourage everyone to come out on the 12th October tomorrow and show that, hey, we stand with Palestine, that this is not stopping. We are a movement, and this is a global movement, and we need to fight for Palestinian justice. not today, but not tomorrow, but every single day until this ends, this injustice ends.
Free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Free, free Palestine!
Thanks, everybody, for coming. This has been a fantastic march all the way to the disgusting United States Embassy in Australia. Yeah. I want to start this speech with a quote from the Gaza Sunbirds. They wrote this morning, "The ceasefire headlines reach us along with bombing."
That was Renee Naef from Students for Palestine speaking at the Melbourne October 12 rally, and before her, May Say from Free Palestine Melbourne. And that's all we've got time for on today's program. Accent of Women is produced in the Melbourne studios of Community Radio 3CR with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The show is distributed nationally by the Community Radio Network, with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. Music for Accent of Women was written and produced by George Cungeri. If you want to hear this show again or any of our previous programs, you can download the podcast from 3CR's website. That's 3cr.org.au. If you want to get in touch with the producers of the show, you can write to us at accentofwomen@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Giselle Hannah, and I look forward to your company again next week.